From UFOs to psychic powers and government conspiracies, history is riddled with unexplained events. You can turn back now or learn the stuff they don't want you to know. A production of iHeartRadio.
Hello, welcome back to the show. My name is Matt.
My name is Noel.
They call me Ben. We're joined, as always, with our super producer, Paul Mission Control Deccant. Most importantly, you are you. You are here. That makes this the stuff they don't want you to know. It's Thursday evening, as you listen now, on the day this comes out. And that means it's one of our favorite times of the week, hopefully yours as well, fellow conspiracy realists. That's right, we're back with more listener mail. We are going to discuss telepathy, actual telepathy. That's weird. That's a thing. We've got a wholesome conspiracy from schools. Seriously, no, this one will, it's a little bit of levity. We got some great responses to our earlier question about the voter age. Before we do any of that, we have some concerning news, or what would you call it, Matt?
I was trying to make a cow reference or a bird reference. I don't know. Noel, you're going to love this one.
Oh boy.
Birds are sick and their sickness is infecting everybody else. And we've been kind of watching things in the news about this since 2022, P.S., but we haven't covered it in full. And Plant Queen reached out to us with the reason why we should cover it. And we'll get into that in just a second.
If your business needs a new application, then developers will have to write code, a lot of code. If an application needs to be modernized, then you'll need time, resources, and caffeine. If that sounds daunting, then you need Watson X Code Assistant, AI designed to multiply developer productivity so you can generate code quickly. Let's create a more modern foundation for business with Watson X Code Assistant. Learn more at ibm.com/codeassistant. IBM. Let's create.
It's the Kia Summer Sticker Sales Event, so give your friends something to look at. Like a B&B with an ocean view, an endless field of wildflowers, or a sunset that needs no filter. Make this a summer to share and save with a capable Kia SUV or powerful sedan. See your local Kia dealer or visit Kia.com to learn more. Kia, movement that inspires.
Call 800-334-KIA for details. Always drive safely. Sale applies to purchase of specially tagged 2024 vehicles only. Quantities are limited. Must take delivery by 7/8/24.
Hey, girlfriends, it's me, Carol Fisher, back with another season of the global number one podcast, The Girlfriends. Last time, we investigated the murder of Gail Katz. This time, we're uncovering the identity of the woman who was buried in Gail's grave for a decade before she disappeared. Join me and the rest of the club as we tell her story. Listen to season two of The Girlfriends, Our Lost Sister, on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Here's the message from Plant Queen.
Hey guys, this is, you can call me the Plant Queen. I hail from Colorado. I have been kind of listening to your guys' podcast for many moons now, many years, and I wanted to call in for the first time, but I don't think anybody's talking about something that should be talked about. In March of this year, bird flu transferred to farm animals and is now making its way into the dairy products. I just wanted to double check and make sure that I have the states right, but it seems that samples were tested. And as of Thursday, bird flu had been detected in 33 herds in 8 states: Idaho, Kansas, Michigan, New Mexico, Carolina, South Dakota, Ohio, and Texas. I just think it's pretty interesting that this hasn't actually hit main news yet. And I feel like maybe you should have a quick discussion about this on air and maybe track this a little bit. Anyways, guys, thanks for all you do for us. And I would die if I heard this on air. Be safe out there. And I hope the this scares back. Bye.
Uh-oh.
Don't die. Don't die.
No. Everything's fine. Everything's fine.
Yeah. I knew the birds were going to be what killed us ultimately, man. I knew it. I've been calling this from day one.
All right. Our individual or personal biases, be they what they may, or biases, whatever. Thank you, Plant Queen, for writing in. And Matt, as you mentioned on air and as we've discussed off air,
We're the type of folks who spend some time thinking about things like this.
Well, yeah, because, look, part of our jobs is to look through the news, like, constantly, always. We don't stop. So if something hits, let's say, an outfit like Reuters or, I don't know what, a Science Alert or a Scientific American, we're going to take note. And this subject has been written about Plant Queen extensively. But for some reason, it just doesn't get the traction. The old bird flu doesn't seem as scary anymore after ye old pandemic, I would posit. Mm-hmm. So I think this is a little under the radar, legit scary thing that's coming our way. Mm-hmm. We tried to gather several of these sources, right, where we can kind of illustrate why it seems like it's getting a bit more of a hairy situation day by day. So we're going to read some of the headlines and then we'll jump into these articles. So this is a headline from Reuters written on May 1st, 2024. And before we get into that, guys, I got to give this little piece of information. Plant Queen called in on April 26th of this year. And she was, when she said Thursday, the testing and the results on Thursday, that was April 25th. So like just like what, last week as we're recording this, basically pretty much last week. So this article from Reuters, May 1st, states, this is the headline, U.S. bird flu outbreak spreads to chickens, cattle, raises concerns over human infections, which is something we've always talked about. What happens when an infection jumps species, right? Jumping from a bird to another bird, like a chicken, right? That's concerning, but okay, that kind of makes sense. Jumping from a bird to a mammal, like, you know, cows, cattle, much more concerning. Jumping from cattle, mammals, then to humans, quite concerning.
Becoming zoonotic.
Mm-hmm. So that, just throwing that out there, that was one of the things. Here's another really concerning one from Science Alert. This was also on May 1st. Bird flu in raw cow milk. So it's transferred now, you know, through the cow via the milk, right? Has killed farm animals in a concerning first, which includes a bunch of cats that were living on a farm who were consuming the milk from the cows. They got bird flu and a bunch of them died.
You know, it's interesting, like, you know, raw milk is a thing. It's a kind of a controversial thing where some people like the idea of raw milk where it hasn't been pasteurized, where you get it directly from the cow. And it's actually, I don't think, entirely legal in some places. But I do have to wonder if pasteurization deals with this, or are we really mainly only concerned with it getting into humans by people drinking the raw milk? It's not that it would necessarily make it to supermarket shelves per se.
According to the FDA, I'm glad you asked that, Noel. According to the FDA, the pasteurization process in American milk that's being produced by these cows that are infected with bird flu is fine to drink because of that pasteurization process. Everything's fine, according to the FDA. Fine. We don't have to worry about a thing. Mm-hmm. We're good to go. We are talking about raw milk here, the thing that spread from the cows to these cats. I'm going to read from this article, though, because it really... I want to say, yeah, FDA, you're right. Pasteurization process is there for a reason. It probably works. Thank goodness it does. We probably shouldn't be that concerned. But this is why it's concerning to me. This is from the article. In mid-March, a mysterious disease began to spread among cows at a North Texas dairy farm. Just a few days later, cats on the farm started acting strangely. Their eyes and noses leaked copiously. They walked incessantly in circles. Their bodies began to grow stiff. They lost their sight and their coordination, and then they began to die.
Is this a horror story that I wrote and forgot? What's going on?
Well, it's one of the most horrible things, especially if you're a lover of cats, as we three are. This is a horrifying thing, right?
Hmm.
But it gets worse, you guys. Hmm. It gets worse. You then jump over to MSNBC. The title of their article is, which was posted on April 30th, 2024, "The bird flu is uncontrolled and it keeps showing up in the scariest places." Maybe a scare tactic to get you to read the article? Feels like it, kind of. But according to this article, the FDA, the Food and Drug Administration, revealed last week, as that article was written, that it had found traces of the bird flu virus in 20% of a nationally representative sample of commercially sold pasteurized milk.
Wait, but I thought the FDA said we were good.
Yeah. Yeah.
Damn it, FDA. You're so asleep on the job.
So it's one of those things like, can I actually get the bird flu from just buying some milk out of a store and taking it home and drinking it? Or maybe, God forbid, giving it to my children? Maybe. That's scary. That's genuinely scary. It continues on down because there are now, there appear to be confirmed cases where this, it's, I think it's H5N1, if you want to refer to it as the specific thing. This has traversed from cattle into a human being at least once or twice. There's one Texas farm where a dairy worker appears to have been infected with this H5N1 virus from the cattle. And this comes to us from statnews.com. You can find it in other places. Like there's a piece in Fortune. The title of that is Texas vet who cares for 40,000 cattle said nearly every farm that had cows sick with bird flu also had sick workers. Which again, who knows? That's a Fortune article. I couldn't gain access to it, guys, because I'm not registered with them or subscribed to Fortune or whatever it is. But you can on Stat News find a free article which goes through some of this stuff. And it cites a report in the New England Journal of Medicine that was put out, goodness, last Friday, as we're recording this on May 3rd, that talks about this person. It's a human being and, quote, unidentified man who has symptoms of this bird flu, and there was a potential or possible route of infection via the cattle. That doesn't mean they've conclusively determined that this man got bird flu from one of the cows, but again, concerning, we should at least be thinking about it.
And Matt, isn't there discussion with the WHO and the scientific community about how the next big pandemic will likely be caused by flu viruses?
Yeah, a zoonotic flu, what would we call this, infection, whatever, I don't know. I don't know what the words would be.
That's the thing, you know, influenza is treatable, but it's very difficult to wipe it out, and it evolves or mutates at such a rapid rate. There's always... You know how, like, you go to a gas station and there's always a couple of mixtapes by people you've never heard of?
Sure.
Influenza is always dropping mixtapes. That's the reason why it remains such a scary thing. You know, it's a, you might be a vegetarian or a vegan in the crowd this evening and saying, well, I don't, you know, I don't interact with dairy as a industry, as a product, et cetera. But this can still hit you, to your point, Matt. And, as you can see, our larger concern, Plant Queen, is the idea of becoming zoonotic. Because once it jumps that chasm, right, once it mutates to that level, which it can very easily do, this is a non-zero possibility. Then the next question is, how communicable does it become amid the human population?
Yeah, and how dangerous is it once you get infected, right?
Right.
And that MSNBC article linked out to another piece from The Guardian from April 20th of this year by Robin McKee, who's the science editor, or one of the science editors for The Guardian. And it says, an international survey to be published next weekend will reveal that 57% of senior disease experts now think that a strain of flu virus will be the cause of the next global outbreak of deadly infectious illness. And that is certainly tied to and part of this bird flu conversation, the avian strain.
Man. Guys, there are too many specifics, I think, even to get into today. I wonder if it's time to do another full-on bird flu episode where we can go through the entire timeline, which you can find, by the way. There are some great sites. I'd go to the poultrysite.com. That's a good one. They've got the dates written out starting back in February of 2022 when there was an outbreak of this, what they called highly pathogenic avian flu, in an Indiana turkey flock. And it was the first case since 2022 of this type of infection in some kind of commercial, what they call poultry population. And it follows it along where it appears to be spreading more and more and more to other types of farm animals, again, including cattle and the cats that live on that farm, and now humans.
Yeah. And this also goes back. This is a modern iteration of a larger pattern. We know it goes back to 1878 when many people listening tonight were not alive.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Here's a really creepy thing in the timeline, guys. On April 25th, the country of Colombia became the first country to restrict the import of beef and beef products coming from the United States due to bird flu in those dairy cows.
A headline that might sound counterintuitive to many of us listening along, but as you point out so astutely, Plant Queen, it's because of the sort of chain of transmission, right? You know, we're not, and true, to be fair, sometimes you'll see kind of constructed rationale for banning imports or exports of things because it's part of a trade war. But in this case, the concern is real. It's not, it has nothing to do with or very little to do with the financial relationship between Colombia and the United States. In that instance, it is because the nation of Colombia doesn't want to be ground zero for some crazy, unbeatable influenza.
Yeah, that, you know, ends up turning us all into zombies. Just kidding. Just kidding. That's not going to happen. We're good. This is not The Last of Us.
For now.
One last thing to go back to that April 23rd instance where the U.S. Food and Drug Administration found those avian influenza particles within pasteurized milk samples. Mm-hmm. They did say, after finding that even, the FDA said, no, the milk supply in the United States is safe because of pasteurization, even though they found the particles in some pasteurized milk. Okay, just leaving that there. Great. We'll be back with more messages from you.
Is getting gas at Shell burning a hole in your wallet? What if I told you can easily earn cash back while you fill up? Introducing Drop, the app that turns every fill up into a reward. With Drop, you'll earn points to get free gift cards every time you fill up your tank. Download Drop and use code DROP88 to instantly receive $5 in points to jumpstart your savings journey. Don't miss out on turning your gas expenses into something rewarding.
Hey, girlfriends, it's me, Carol Fisher. I'm so excited to tell you about the brand new series of The Girlfriends. In season one, we told you about the murder of Gail Katz at the hands of my ex-boyfriend, Bob. At one point, a woman's torso washed up on Staten Island and was misidentified as Gail. She spent 9 years in Gail's grave, and then she just disappeared.
It's almost like it's become this moral obligation to find her.
And that's what we're going to do. Find this missing girlfriend and tell her story. With the help of some of your favorite girlfriends from season one, like my producer, Anna.
Oh my God.
My friend, Dr. Mindy Shapiro.
Hi, it's Dr. Shapiro, and I'd like to speak with the deputy medical examiner.
And of course, Gail's sister, Elaine Katz.
Having no closure, it kills you.
Join us as we try to solve a 35-year-old cold case. It's not going to be easy, but it's going to be one hell of a ride.
What?
I can't believe this.
Listen to season two of The Girlfriends, Our Lost Sister on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
A new season of Bridgerton is here. And with it, a new season of Bridgerton, the official podcast. I'm your host, Gabrielle Collins, and this season, we are bringing fans even deeper into the ton. Colin Bridgerton has returned from his travels abroad. Is betrothal written in the stars for the eligible bachelor? Meanwhile, the ton is reverberating with speculation of who holds Lady Whistledown's pen. We're discussing it all. I sit down with Nicola Coughlin, Luke Newton, Shonda Rhimes, and more to offer an exclusive peek behind the scenes of each episode of the new season. Watch season three of the Shondaland series on Netflix. Then, fall in love all over again by listening to Bridgerton, the official podcast, on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts. Subscribe to catch a new episode every Thursday.
And we've returned with another message from you. Yes, you, a repeat offender. That's not sounds mean. We actually heard from this individual last week. I think I had an email from GP Scooch. Ooh. In our last listener mail. We don't typically do back-to-back features of our wonderful listeners here, but this one was too good to pass up and too topical, given the current political climate and election cycle and all of that. So
also to be clear, he's not joking in this one.
No,
this
is not. That's right. Yes, this is a very, very thoughtful.
I've seen Clone Force.
This is a bit of a long one, but yeah. I think absolutely worth it. I'm just going to read it straight through, and then we'll just discuss. So, dear parasocial friends, as a general rule of thumb, I wait at least 24 hours before writing a response to a question or statement that has ignited a base reaction. Your question about placing an upper limit on voting age elicited such a reaction, and yes, I waited the 24 hours. With the passage of the 26th Amendment in 1971, I was among a group of new voters falling in the range of over 18, but less than 21 at the time. I can assure you, we received no instructions or guidance on how to exercise this new power. We simply did as everyone before us had done, pay attention to what interested us, be it local, state, or national, and responded with a ballot that reflected our position. Also, nothing happened that suddenly made us any smarter, better at decision-making, more learned in the steps of practical and critical thinking, or any other aspect of our lives one would hope for from an informed electorate. Our society uses artificial age measurements for many of our daily rights and responsibilities. These age limits must be reached to drive, to consume alcohol, to make contracts, to own guns, to enlist in the military, to hold certain jobs, and so on. To rent a car, I might add. To prove how artificial these are, a kid in Kansas can get a special permit to drive for very restricted and specific purposes at age 14. Surrounding states are age 15 or 16. So are Kansas kids more mature and responsible? In Missouri, a server in a restaurant can take the order for alcohol at age 18, which means they are selling it. But they must be 21 to prepare that same order and to deliver it to the customer. This means a dining establishment might need a special person to deliver drinks, one over 21. We all know people in their 30s who we regret can drive, own guns, drink, and vote. You're here. We know people who should never be allowed to do any of these things at any age. Thus far, I have only discussed the lower age limit because that is, in my opinion, where most people have had personal experience with these regulations. Of course, we all know people in their 80s or 90s who should no longer be driving an automobile. But we also know people in their 40s who should not be driving either. There are no upper limits for holding political or appointed office in the United States. Maybe there should be. But this could most easily be addressed through term limits, not age restrictions. Just as there is no standard for maturity in an American 18-year-old, there is no standard 90-year-old or 80-year-old or 72-year-old. At this later age, I am more active and am aware of issues than many of my associates who are 20 or more years younger. I know people in their 90s more active and aware than I. The Constitution prohibits testing of literacy or wealth qualifications for voters. It stands to reason that mental competency tests would also be prohibited, especially in light of the fact that some members of our Congress and some candidates expound some of the weirdest shit I have seen or heard in nearly five decades of education. No, gentlemen, there can be no upper limit on voting, or you may lose a large block of seasoned, experienced Americans who do use critical thinking and can apply what they have learned to the ballot. Just to prove how seriously we take the issue, there are several petitions circulating to remove the Lego limitation of 99 years as the upper age limit on their product. Lego, like the toy. I'm sorry, some might take issue with me calling it a toy. The construction hobby project, whatever. As always, I love what you are doing, have converted many students to avid listeners after my Bob Bordella and obscene Clone Fall letters made it onto the air. Well, thank you. It seems to impress students more than a collection of degrees or published works. That's funny. Who knew? Approvals for everything, as always. Great Grandpa GGP Scooch. What? Oh, man. It's so easy to get caught up in like one aspect of something like age limits, where it seems to make perfect sense. But then you realize how many other situations it applies to and how it's a total throwing the baby out with the bathwater situation, which, you know, it does make it difficult to have laws that cover all those things, all of the possible scenarios. So I'm not saying it's easy to make laws that are appropriately kind of scalable. I know it's not. But we certainly see overreaching in a lot of lawmakers that you know, will certainly do something with one intent, but it has all these other unintended consequences. So I think maybe I was the one kind of beating the drum for like upper age limits, you know, for folks that maybe are no longer in a situation where they're able to exercise that critical thinking, or they may have gone down some sort of gnarly rabbit hole, whether it be via isolation or some sort of onset of perhaps a cognitive disorder. But there's so many others that are absolutely the standard bearer of democracy in that age group that we would also be losing. So one would hope that, per GGP Scooch's point, that it's sort of, there's a balancing that takes place, a kind of an equalizing there. And I would like to think that's true, but I don't know, guys. The lower age limit thing has always been very interesting to me because it's true. Like, I have a 15-year-old who I know to be much more mature than a lot of 18-year-olds, you know, who are in their peer group or friend group. And there's so many factors that lead to maturity that can come at a much earlier age or at a much later age, or like arrested development or whatever. But those limits are still in place. And, you know, some people might reach the age where they are able to exercise the vote, but maybe don't have the information, and they're kind of muddying the waters a little bit. But then one would hope that there's a balancing factor there too. So I don't know. What do you guys think? This is a really thoughtful analysis from Scooch here.
Yeah. GGP Scooch, first, thank you again for the obscene clone falls, as I said earlier. And thank you also for this very well-written and thorough and fascinating, well-reasoned, I would say, reply to my original question about upper age limits for voting. We've discussed this a bit on the show, the idea, the relatively arbitrary nature of some of those lower-end voting restrictions or ritualized rites of passage. You know, everybody remembers, I imagine, the big kerfuffle when people were getting drafted into the military before they were legally able to do other stuff besides die in a war. I also want to shout out our pal, super producer, Paul Mission Control Deccant, who did indeed get his learner's permit. He has revealed this at the age of 14.
Because of the stipulation that Scooch was talking about.
Mm-hmm. And then Paul also has pointed out there's the farmer's permit, which you can get at age 14. The difference being that with a learner's or driver's ed learner's permit, at 14, you have to drive with an adult in the front seat with you. But a farmer's permit allows you to drive by yourself so long as you are going to or from a farming job or doing farm-related work. And I also have a bit of a past with that because, you know, if you're out in the country, in many parts of America, you'll just see a kid on the road. Sometimes he's on a John Deere tractor. You know what I mean? Shout out to Tractor Supply.
I don't mean, I'm sorry, guys. Just really quickly, my 8-year-old the other day,
driving. Did he drive?
When I picked him up from daycare, and he hopped in the front seat before I got even into the car, and he was like, "All right, Dad. So when are you going to teach me how to drive? I'm ready." And you know, he can't touch the pedals, but he knew all the mechanisms. He was like, "Oh no, that's the gas, that's the brake, this is how you steer, this is how you put it in drive." And I was just like, "Nah, man, not yet. Nah, not sorry."
Yet. Sorry. Get him one of those little cars. You know what I mean? Little kid cars.
He's too big for most of them. I'll find something.
You'll find
Most of them are cost prohibitive, but
get him something that's like not quite a real car, like a Miata.
Yeah.
I walked down the street for that one. Yeah. Send the email.
What do they call those? A Mini Cooper.
But those are no longer Mini. Look at the old Mini Coopers. Look at the car stuff.
They are large now, aren't they?
I yield my time.
One thing I can't remember, because we did talk about this, right? We mentioned. Okay, so did I tell you the quick story about visiting my cousins? I think I maybe did. I want to echo something that Scooch said there about knowing there's no standard 90, 80, or 70-year-old. So I was in North Georgia visiting my mid to late 70-year-old cousins, and they're amazing. They're selling a house. They're really super cool. They are feeling their age a little bit due to some health issues, right? They told me that their friend is showing up, and they told me she's a little older. This Lincoln SUV rolls into their driveway, and out pops this lady Mm-hmm. That's just like, oh, hey, y'all, how you doing? And just like super vibrant, lively. She is 94 years old.
Yep.
And I would have
effervescent.
Right? I would never have guessed that she was that age. And oh, again, man. It's just that point of like the age really doesn't have anything to do with it.
No, it doesn't. We're talking about mitigating circumstances that could happen to anybody at any age. You know,
that's
or
the
any,
thing.
Yeah.
There's mm-hmm. not a one size fits all. Even in a relatively homogenous civilization, like think of Japan, right? Even when people will tend to share more genetic factors than they would in a nation like the United States, you still can't account for the case-by-case variables. I did drop a little bit of a trick there, Scooch, and I think you're picking up on it. The arbitrary concept of what age is or is not appropriate to engage in things like driving or voting or, you know, joining the military and so on. That sort of stuff, in the case of voting, I would argue, is compounded by the fact that voting is a right that can be removed in the U.S., right? If you have a felony conviction, et cetera. However, it is not an obligation. And I yet again say that there is a lot of sand to requiring people to vote, you know, because if you're part of a nation, it's kind of like you're part of the club, right?
You're required to pay taxes.
You got to pay taxes. So do you choose taxation without representation? That's a question some people got really up their butts about in 1776 or so.
Then you don't think, though, perhaps the lack of a you know, mandatory vote isn't in some way convenient for politicians who maybe would rather some people not vote, or right. they're like depending on that complicity in mm-hmm. order to help get elected because they know that it's easier to fire up a zealous base than it is to, like, you know, convert people that are maybe not interested.
It's a bag of badgers. Yeah, it's a complicated thing. There's not really, we don't know the answers, folks. You tell us, fellow conspiracy realist, how you would solve for a more equitable voting situation, more equitable society. It's a question that's haunted the humans since they started being people. But the other issue here, you know, you're absolutely right, for some bad faith actors, knowing that people will not vote is a tremendous power, especially when added on to gerrymandering and other very unethical practices.
Mandatory to vote in a lot of other countries.
Yeah, Australia is one.
Shout Argentina, Australia. Belgium, mm-hmm. yep. Bolivia, Brazil, yep. Congo, Costa yep. Rica, mm-hmm. a lot of places that we would consider third world countries, quote unquote. You know,
as a Cold War nomenclature.
I know. I'm just saying, it's still thrown around.
But guys, imagine you're up there, you know. You're up for election. You control part of the government. Mm-hmm. How do you ensure that those informed people are informed in the right ways that you want them to be? Pack the court. I feel like we need something. I don't know what it would be or what you would call it, but like some form of separate voting block of people that takes the suggested vote of all the other people, and then they
some
get
sort of
to
learned
vote.
Collegiate type
Never
institution.
Never gonna work.
Pop proxy vote. Let's do more of the proxy vote situation.
Also, the other issue here, which I believe you have quite astutely anticipated, Scooch, is that we cannot return to the days of polling test. We cannot.
Oh, 100%.
We cannot.
Those are inherently
practice
F's.
That. Sorry, it's look. If everybody was nice and acting in good faith, then that would be fine. It would be amazing if people had the time and the opportunity and the impetus to research the specific issues that they're voting on. But to be quite honest with you, many times in the United States, someone goes in to do their bit, right? Their civic duty, and they vote and they know a couple of the questions that they want to weigh in on. And then they get hit with all these other weird questions, often phrased in misleading ways. Do you not approve of a following tax relief for a small maritime craft if it is added to a municipal tax totaling the final thing subdivided over the 17 years? And then you're like, bro, you think about the last time you saw a boat.
The ones among us who do all the homework possible still get thrown by those kinds of questions. You think you're going in fully, you know, educated, ready to exercise your civic duty. And then you, every time we'll get a handful of these WTF moments where you're like, I think this is right. But sometimes it's worded in a way that's borderline intended to trick.
Decision trium. You know what I mean? Hit the electorate with a semicolon just in the middle of the question.
Just write in Kanye West. That's what I do.
Or do what my best friend and I have done for many years, and write your pal in for a local municipal position that you do not understand. Mm-hmm. Shout out Corey Oliver. Give me a comptroller one day.
Oh, man. We only just figured out what a comptroller actually does.
It took us a while. It took us a while.
I could see Corey being a great comptroller.
He's got the gift of gab, that's for sure.
There we go.
Is that necessary for comptroller?
I don't think so.
It's not their number one thing.
Dang.
But
not like parliamentarian.
We cannot overemphasize the importance of not returning to polling tests. They have historically, at least in this country, only been used to disenfranchise people. And we also, I don't know, I'm still on the fence about forcing citizens to vote. I think it's worth a shot. Like you said, Noel, it has worked in other countries, but then also we run the possibility, the risk of capturing blocks of voters and sending them in to vote not their conscience, but to vote on their marching orders. You know, that's already a problem here. What happens when people have to vote and they just say, someone tell me what to do, don't make me think about it.
Well, I think that was exactly the shot in the arm that we needed from GGP Scooch. So thank you very, very much for the email itself and for, you know, giving us such a great jumping off point for this conversation. I do think, I don't know, man. Mandatory voting, the more I think about it, or just the more like all of the things that we just discussed, there might be an episode in there somewhere. You know, I mean, it's certainly something that we've talked about in the past, but there might be a way of getting into this, you know, once election season comes around, you know, to kind of explore some of the more niche ins and outs of the history of why is voting in this country the way that it is. So.
Tell you what, let's vote about it off air.
And why do I always experience voter's remorse? You know what I mean?
Is that a thing?
Yeah.
I think it is.
Okay.
It's like buyer's remorse, but it's like after you voted and you're like, ah, dang it.
Oh, yeah. Well, it's sort of like that moment, like the opposite of deja vu. It's the French concept of the spirit of the staircase. Yeah. The moment you've not said the smart thing and you're gone, then you come up with the smartest possible thing, but it's totally too late.
You're like, I should have said that lawyer was working pro boner. Hey. Damn it.
Let's take a quick pause and come up with some more Spirit of the Staircase zingers that we can have in our back pocket. And then we'll be back with another piece of listener mail.
Ever wolfed down a Big Mac and thought, I could use some extra cash?
Mm-hmm.
Meet Drop, the ultimate rewards app. Earn free gift cards for getting your daily coffee or late night drive through effortlessly. Just link a card, shop, and watch rewards stack. With Drop, it's like getting paid to indulge. Download Drop now and start earning. Use the code DROP22 for $5 in points instantly.
Hey, girlfriends, it's me, Carol Fisher. I'm so excited to tell you about the brand new series of The Girlfriends. In season one, we told you about the murder of Gail Katz at the hands of my ex-boyfriend, Bob. At one point, a woman's torso washed up on Staten Island and was misidentified as Gail. She spent 9 years in Gail's grave, and then she just disappeared.
It's almost like it's become this moral obligation to find her.
And that's what we're going to do. Find this missing girlfriend and tell her story. With the help of some of your favorite girlfriends from season one, like my producer, Anna.
Oh, my God.
My friend, Dr. Mindy Shapiro.
Hi, it's Dr. Shapiro, and I'd like to speak with the deputy medical examiner.
And of course, Gail's sister, Elaine Katz.
Having no closure, it kills you.
Join us as we try to solve a 35-year-old cold case. It's not going to be easy, but it's going to be one hell of a ride.
What?
I can't believe this.
Listen to season 2 of The Girlfriends, Our Lost Sister on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
A new season of Bridgerton is here. And with it, a new season of Bridgerton, the official podcast. I'm your host, Gabrielle Collins, and this season, we are bringing fans even deeper into the ton. Colin Bridgerton has returned from his travels abroad. Is betrothal written in the stars for the eligible bachelor? Meanwhile, the ton is reverberating with speculation of who holds Lady Whistledown's pen. We're discussing it all. I sit down with Nicola Coughlin, Luke Newton, Shonda Rhimes, and more to offer an exclusive peek behind the scenes of each episode of the new season. Watch season 3 of the Shondaland series on Netflix. Then, fall in love all over again by listening to Bridgerton, the official podcast, on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts. Subscribe to catch a new episode every Thursday.
And we have returned. Bit of listener mail, one wholesome letter from home. Our listener mail here comes from Jay Connor, who says, "Hello, my gents with a Z. You may call me Jay Connor. Longtime listener, longtime fan. As the Western public is distracted by Taylor Swift and the multiple wars in the East, major breakthroughs in technology continue to be made. Advances that will change our society and flip the world economy upside down. I'm sure more people would care that 20% of jobs will be affected by AI and automation by 2035 and 50% of jobs by 2050 if we were not conveniently oversaturated with information on a daily basis or the public understood predetermined media celebrity fawning, amplified non-critical issues and controversies, and, world incidents are sometimes timed to correspond with technological revelations, or more commonly, a divulge of information damaging to the interests of whichever respective ruling establishment." To break that down, saying celebrity hubbubs, Taylor Swift discourse, Drake getting slapped by KDOT in the latest hip hop beef. Team KDOT, by the way. What he's saying is sometimes this occurs such that other things can slide under the radar, just like that new Manta drone out there in the water. And they're asking you to look at the right hand and pay no attention to the left. And I think that's something we can agree with on this show, right? Would you say that happens?
How about this? To my perception, mm-hmm. It happens all the time. That doesn't mean it is purposefully done, right?
True. Right.
Because you would have, in order to prove that, you would have to actually make those connections that seem so like obvious, mm-hmm. right? But yeah. There's no actual connective tissue other than,
we know about it. I'm wearing a trucker hat today and I'm like, we know what's going on.
That's an awesome trucker hat too.
Shout out to our pal for the locals, number 4, our buddy Harold. So the true mayor of Atlanta aside, Jay Connor continues, "It's hard for the average person to fathom how fast AI is improving or to truly ponder the implications of now living in a world with text-to-photo and text-to-video prompt programs that only corporations and governments have access to. It's even harder to care when your tax dollars are being used to drop bombs in Gaza, but I digress. No, my fellow chums, I'm here to inform you and show you this new reality we live in, one where AI has been proven in the laboratory, I want to say laboratory at this point, laboratory to have the capabilities to, dun, 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 read minds. Or, if I were to phrase it more professionally, to, quote, decode brainwaves into communicative text, end quote. Oh, says Jake Connor, but it doesn't stop there, my friends. Meta, formerly Facebook, has announced that they have not only proven AI can read minds, but it can also illustrate what you are thinking. Yes, a literal picture. Let's stop there because we have talked about this recently. Matt, you brought this story not too long ago about some of the first legislation to protect brain waves. Am I oversimplifying out of Colorado?
No, not at all. It to protect essentially the intellectual property that are your thoughts.
There we go. Nothing weird. So do check out. I'm sure you already know about this, Jay, but for everybody else, if you missed that one, check it out. It's an interesting case of legislation attempting to be proactive, right? To set the lay of the land for future inevitable technological progress.
This is something we didn't talk about, or at least a connection we didn't make in that discussion. It's a connection to, and I think it bridges our AI discussion here, the way these large language learning models, or whatever, what are they called?
The LLMs.
The things that we call AI nowadays.
Okay.
The way
machine learning, let's say it that way.
Yeah. The way many of them were originally developed, it was by just taking up any and all information that was available, right? Mm. And we've learned over the past couple of weeks and months, some of the loopholes, legal loopholes and legal bending that was occurring when those things were developed, where basically copyright law was just kind of ignored in order to make sure there was enough stuff to develop several of these. and we've learned that from the words of the attorneys themselves, who were kind of instructed to ignore some of that stuff.
Some real forgiveness versus permission rationale.
Yes. Which makes you think about what happens when brainwaves are now accessible to people and what types of legal loopholes and legal bending will occur when that stuff's just being sucked up into the cloud and it's your brain thoughts, your meat murmurings, like what happens? I'm just saying it's
your first and last refuge. The last thing that was sacrosanct. Look, I'm not here to call anybody out, but Matt, Noel, Paul, fellow conspiracy realist, Doc, too, every single person you've ever met has thought of some crazy things. And the difference is they did not necessarily act on those. This, I would argue, this gets us very close to a world of pre-crime, right? And incorrectly predictive things. If you are hearing this now, you have, to one degree or another, you've thought about killing somebody. You maybe haven't planned it out, but we've all had that what if moment. You've been on the road and you thought, what if I just tilt the wheel just a little bit, you know?
Yeah, it makes me think of the three body problem. I don't want to spoil it too much, but there's a position that's created within that world. Mm. It's called
wall facers?
Wall facers.
Yeah.
People who specifically develop plans in the darkened room that is their brain. They don't tell anybody about those plans and their ideas, but they develop these things in their own mind. And eventually, those plans are spilled and get deployed, right?
Mm-hmm.
There'd be no more of that. Somebody actually, you know, when it's a think tank now, it's a, I don't know, a cloud tank thought thing.
I think it's also a great violation of human rights, you know, or the rights of a thing that thinks, to be quite clear. You should be able to evaluate the world with at least some shred of sanctuary, some kind of internal safe place. You know what I mean? Because
that's the way we think about it now.
Right, right. You know, but are we not thinking things? Do we not have the right to think the things that we think? This gets close to, again, decision tree thought, which is a very dangerous proposition, right? And it's the kind of gun that fires in both directions. There is no one in that conversation who will not somehow become a victim of such a mad pursuit. Now, of course, apologies, Jay, we're going to summarize some of your email, which is fantastic for time. We want to get to something that you pointed out after a pretty top-notch explanation of the brain as biological computer, which you absolutely nailed, by the way. You have shared what we were talking about, the creation of something like telepathy, and you didn't go into any skullduggery. And I think this is what Jay is shouting into the void and into the rooftops. Now, Meta has extensive research on this topic. You can read about it, at least their public-facing stuff, on ai.meta.com. Go to blog, AI speech, and brain activity. This contains video content. This also contains summarizations of their studies and ongoing research. It is directly on their website, as Jay points out, which prompts Jay to call this a, quote, open secret, yet very few know about what's going on in these laboratories. It scares me sometimes how fast technology is progressing, unbeknownst to much of the world. And I'd like to give everybody a quote from the website that Jay shared with us. This is from August 31st, 2022. So more than a year has passed at this point. Meta, FKA Facebook, says, every year, more than 69 million people around the world suffer traumatic brain injury, which leaves many of them unable to communicate through speech, typing, or gestures. These people's lives could dramatically improve if researchers develop a technology to decode language directly from, you'll love this, non-invasive brain recordings. Today, we're sharing research that takes a step toward this goal. We've developed an AI model that can decode speech from, again, non-invasive recordings of brain activity. And they go through just how far they've gotten through this methodology, case test, and all of this leads Jay to cite some University of Texas, Semantic Info, Brainwaves AI research, some pieces from CNN, MSNBC. And Jay says, I'll leave it there. I'll let you go down the rest of the rabbit hole yourselves. Ponder the possibilities. Like, if you built a sensor strong enough, could you capture brainwaves meters away and read minds at a distance? Could we build telepathy? I'm pretty sure at this point the answer is yes. I don't know. Jay got to me.
I can't wait for telepathy, man. It'll be like that story Noel was talking about where you can walk through with a card reader and
I was about to say
get everybody's credit cards, man. It's gonna be sick.
We were talking about that legislation that just came through, I believe, in Colorado, where they're trying to protect, you know, the infiltration of our minds, man, you know, to get our personal data or IP or whatever. That is telepathy, you know, that's technologically enhanced or you know, created telepathy.
And
it's coming, y'all. I really do think it is. I'm not kidding.
It's already here. It's just not public yet, I'm sure. Jade concludes, I mean, in 50 years, when the state-sponsored drone that patrols my neighborhood flies by to protect my thoughts from its mind-decoding sensors and software, the most efficient and practical defense against it would be to put on my tinfoil hat. Maybe, man, but check out our tinfoil hat episode. We know you did. You have to encase the entire biological machine. You know what I mean? A future of hazmat suits.
We just need Faraday cage domiciles. Yeah.
Let's make it the new hip hop flex. You know what I mean? Forget the Rolex. Give me my Faraday.
I wonder if you could build a Wi-Fi chamber, like a Faraday house, right? Mm-hmm. That has a Wi-Fi chamber that allows the Wi-Fi to go through that chamber and directly to a device. And you could plug in to your modular wall these tubes that allow Wi-Fi. It would be like having cables.
Mm-hmm. This guy right here, plug it into this. Yeah. Right there. Yeah.
Sorry. Noel is showing a cavalcade of cables.
Well, it's a modular synthesizer.
It's my modular wall. Yeah.
Yeah. So what I'm imagining is a modular internet. Oh, wait, I'm literally describing a router and an old modem.
Well, you're also describing, I mean, if you've ever been in a server room or, you know, one of those massive server farms, that's all modular as well. Each one of those drives that creates the internet is a slotted thing that's physically installed somewhere and then patched together with other stuff.
I just also, you know, for anybody who's been through it, I find there's a subreddit called Oddly Satisfying or something like that. And they have a lot of cable management pictures What it's called, where someone bringing order from the chaos. No,
totally. Yeah.
It's just somehow reassuring. You know, I can't even see the colors. And I'm just like, look at that. They bring
you can't
it
exactly
together.
Do that with the modular because it's meant to be, you know, put in and then reset. So if you did cable management, that's for stuff that like stays connected all the time. But this by nature, so good, you're bringing order to the chaos by just hooking it up correctly. You know what I mean? Like that's, yeah.
I just want a lack of clutter. I like clean things.
I agree. That's nice, man. But think about the data clutter that's like hitting you, the waves, right?
The clutter, all the crafts.
You know what I'm saying? You can't see it, but it's there. I'm saying let's start the wired movement again. Mm-hmm. Let's get it back. All wired technology. That's it. No Wi-Fi. Yeah, dude. Let's do it.
Also, this is funny. This is making me think of the idea of getting a report card. For your thoughts, maybe around the time you pay your taxes. Mm-hmm. It's like, here's the percentage of times that you had aberrant imaginings.
Oh, no.
Have you guys ever owned a car that
thought
monitors
crime.
Your
That's
driving?
Thought crime.
Yes. I've participated in them, but I refuse to own one.
Okay, so my car had that, where you literally get a report card that is monitoring everything you have done in that vehicle. For the entirety that you've been driving it. And it was like, bro, you got a 68. I'm sorry. You need to slow down, take those corners a little better, make sure you're signaling, which I am, because the dang thing thinks that I'm changing lanes when they've got painting on the lanes is wrong or they've redone. I take umbrage. Is that the word for it? I take umbrage of with this. But anyway, just it's creepy to think of that, as you're saying, Ben, applied to. If you could open up the terminal of your mind and just see everything that's happening.
Yeah. I mean, I don't know if humans are ready for that level of cybernetic integration. And we don't know what the world will look like at that time. It's fascinating stuff. It's worrying. It is arguably inevitable on some level. And listen, when this kind of stuff is rolled out, or message to the public, it always comes in glowing terms, right? In very happy, futuristic, optimist terms, right? We're going to help people with TBI, which is true. That part is true. But also we have to ask about the other side of this, because technology knows no ideological dilemmas, right? It knows only the ethics of its creators. Which is a scary thing. And it's one of the big problems with AI now. Write to us. We want to hear your thoughts about it. Before we end, because that is kind of a trippy thing, we want to thank everybody who's written to us. We also want to give a special shout out to Tonks, who hipped us to a very wholesome conspiracy from the world of education. This is our letter from home. Hi, guys. Longtime listener, but have never wrote in until now. Thought you all might want to know about an active conspiracy going on in my little public pre-K through 12 rural school. I work at this school that has 100 kids from pre-kindergarten to 12th grade. Class sizes range from 10 to 1. Just like every other place that deals with small children, we also have the notorious stomach ache that comes around when students don't want to work.
Being my tum-tum.
Is that a thing?
Oh, gosh, yes.
That's a real
Actually,
thing.
You know, I think it might have become a little bit more headaches now with the Gen Z kids and their anxiety and neuroses. I think a headache might be more popular, but definitely the legacy thing was my tum-tum.
A little malingering, right? Faking an illness. Yeah. So, okay. So Tonk says, being a school, we have very strict regulations on medications being given to students. That's a good thing. I am one, says Tonks, of only 3 people in the district that's allowed to administer medication. Most schools, when they run into tummy trouble, or as you said, headaches, without any accompanying visible symptoms, they rely on letting kids have a 5 to 10 minute rest in the nurse's office before returning to class. My school has found a way around this, however. Peppermint candy. Yes, the red and white striped candy is our answer to every excuse. The nice thing is, because of the peppermint extract, it does help mild nausea. Being a hard candy, it provides some relief to scratchy throats and coughs. Because these are candy and not actually treating anything, shout out to our supplements episode, we can give them to the kids. The older kids have figured out the grift, but still swing by the office for a mint now and then. Thanks for all you guys do. You keep me company on my drive every day. I think somebody got me with this when I was younger. I think I got pepperminted.
I mean, it can, you know, there might be a placebo effect involved as well, but peppermint does have some stomach calming properties, you know?
Peppermint's great. I just think it's, we wrote back to Tonks and just said, you know, this is one of our favorite wholesome childhood conspiracies up there with Santa Claus. Spoiler alert, everybody. Oh, Big Claus is shutting us down. Guys, Operation Jingle Bells in full effect. Geez. We got to go. Thanks to Tonks, Plant Queen, GP Scooch, Jay Connor, everybody else. This has been a fun one, huh?
I agree.
I just realized I peppermint myself all the time when I reach for a stick of gum. Or something, you know, that's just peppermint flavored. And I'm like, oh, peppermint.
Ooh, a little sharper, right? Stay frosty, my friends. Was that the Dos Equis guy? Stay thirsty, stay interesting?
Maybe. Well, he's the most interesting. Isn't he the most interesting
he's
man?
He's the most interesting dude. Yeah. I think he says stay thirsty.
I think you might be right.
Well, let us know, folks. Give us your favorite ad campaigns. Give us any old thing. We cannot wait to hear from you, and perhaps you will join us in a future listener mail program. We try to be easy to find in a number of ways.
That's right. You can find us at the handle Conspiracy Stuff, where we exist on Facebook, YouTube, and X, FKA, Twitter, on Instagram and TikTok. We're Conspiracy Stuff Show.
We have a phone number. It is 1-833-STDWYTK. When you call in, you've got 3 minutes. Give yourself a cool nickname and let us know in that message if we can use your name and message on the air. If you got more to say than can fit into that voicemail, why not instead send us a good old-fashioned email? We are
conspiracy@iHeartRadio.com.
Stuff They Don't Want You to Know is a production of iHeartRadio. For more podcasts from iHeartRadio, visit the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you listen to your favorite shows.
Is getting gas at Exxon burning a hole in your wallet? Get the Drop app. With Drop, you can earn free gift cards just by filling up your tank. Download Drop now. Use code DROP66 to instantly receive $5 in points.
Hey, girlfriends, it's me, Carol Fisher, back with another season of the global number one podcast, The Girlfriends. Last time, we investigated the murder of Gail Katz. This time, we're uncovering the identity of the woman who was buried in Gail's grave for a decade before she disappeared. Join me and the rest of the club as we tell her story. Listen to season two of The Girlfriends, Our Lost Sister, on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Hi, guys. Nancy Grace here, host of podcast Crime Stories with Nancy Grace. I've dedicated my life to fighting crime and helping crime victims. For a decade, I prosecuted violent felonies. Every day is a mission. Every day is a chance to stop crime and keep one more person safe. Listen to Crime Stories with Nancy Grace on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcast.